honeymoon.
Do these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
Killer Bees are on a roll. We've handed out a winner every single week of the NFL season, with the one exception of us not being there that week. What week was that? The week after Christmas? But every other week, we've handed out a winner. Now, we haven't had great success, including the wild card round, but we've handed out a winner. You just got to pick that winner. It's on you. The onus is on you.
We were torn between two winners, feeling like a fool, and we went the wrong direction.
Last week, there was mentioning the Killer Bees and winners last week in the same sentence would have been a failure, would have been stupid, would not have been a very smart thing to do. We were 1-5 last week. The one wins whenever you were premature celebrating that we were going to lose, against you. That's all right. We went against you and won. But last week, we went 1-5. We won one of the six wild card games in the super wild card round of the NFL playoffs. And we lost $210 of Mr. Gow's money. And boy, did we hear about it.
Ouchie.
We heard about it. Anyways, we have $525. Look, I'm a glass half full kind of guy. Like, we still have more than half of the glass that Mr. Gow handed us, $1,000 at the start of the year, to bet on BZ Money. But we're down to $525. We got to start making some, as Cardi B, the great Cardi B would say, some money moves. We got to start making some money moves here, Blankers. So yeah. We got to start winning some football games. We have the division round this week. We have the conference championship round the week after that. And then we have the Super Bowl. We have 7 games left in the NFL season for us to try to win back the $475 we lost from our allowance at the start of the year.
How much money do we need to win back to keep our jobs for Mr. Gow?
I think breaking even would be the guarantee, but being close would be nice.
It depends on how much, I don't know, maybe it might depend on the Cowboys, to be quite honest with you.
That's a good point. He's a big Cowboy.
Now, I think we probably need to win more than he gave us for you to keep your job, B-Mac. I feel pretty comfortable with ours, though.
I think we're good.
I think we're all right.
I'm feeling questionable about my job, maybe even next week. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, then you better step up your game. Friday.
Anyways, let's get into these games. We'll start in Arrowhead, Kansas City, where Trevor Lawrence said it's not going to be all that loud. Jacksonville heads into Arrowhead. The Chiefs are giving up 9 points, home favorite against the darling Jacksonville Jaguars. How are we feeling about this one, Blankers?
Feeling Chiefs, and I'm feeling Chiefs in a fairly big way. I had seen it at 8.5. If it's 9 and that's what we're playing, then that's what we're playing. But I believe that the Chiefs are on a mission. I believe at home it's a different ball game than playing in Jacksonville. I believe that slow start that the Jags got off to, normally you don't get up off the mat from that one, and that they basically spent everything they could, and they've celebrated the win. They've gotten way farther than they were supposed to. They're playing with house money, but now they're going to run into a buzzsaw. And I believe Mahomes and company are going to send a clear message to whoever that they will then match up with the following week, that we are ready for you, whoever you are. And you better be ready for us. I think the Chiefs win this game. I think they cover the spread. I think this is a big roll win for the Chiefs.
A lot of these games in the divisional round, I look at from like, what is the team's goal? Like, what is their ceiling? Like, what are they trying to accomplish? Kansas City, it's Super Bowl or bust, right? Like, they have, if they don't win a Super Bowl, the season is a disappointment for the Kansas City Chiefs. The Jacksonville Jaguars getting to the divisional round is a win from where they were a year ago, going from the last place in the AFC South to winning the division and then winning their first playoff game in a very long time. Their season has already been a success.
Yep.
I don't see Jacksonville going into Kansas City and, quite frankly, putting up a game. I think Pat Mahomes, their first playoff game, I believe that they roll all over Jacksonville. They win by 2 touchdowns or more, and Jacksonville boards the plane back to Duval and is happy with their year. And Kansas City carries on with their business. I think Kansas City rolls in this one.
I'm a little nervous about the 9. I'd be more comfortable if it was a point or two lower, but I agree with you guys. I would take KC minus the 9. I just think all the energy and emotion coming off that huge comeback win against the Chargers the week before might kind of have a deflating effect where they're all kind of celebrating their win, not really looking forward to KC. They're not ready for this game. I think the Chiefs roll.
All right, how much are we putting on this? Because, again, $525 left. We have 7 games to play with through the rest of the NFL season. I think we started to be
75.
Bold. You go with 75. You go with 75.
Yeah, if we're going to catch up and get to even, we got to bet big.
Yep. We'll start making some money moves. All right, there we go. Kansas City, minus 9, $75. Put it in the bank. All right, Philadelphia, the link. Greg Frank will be there. He'll be chanting RBI, multiple RBI, as they host the New York football Giants. How are we feeling about Philly minus 7.5 against their division rival?
You know, some people think this is going to be a close game. Again, I think that New York did similar to what Jacksonville did. They did what they said couldn't be done. Not only did they make the playoffs, they went on the road and they beat a division winner in a playoff game. Daniel Jones probably solidified himself as a quarterback in the NFL, and he's going to get a nice big bump in salary, and he's going to be a quarterback. Saquon Barkley proved again that he could still be a guy that you can utilize and build around in your offense. And I think the Giants did what they were supposed to do. I don't see this being as close as a lot of people do. I think that, to me, the Eagles are going to win by at least 10 points. What's the latest spread we're going with?
We're going with 7.5.
I think that the Eagles win this game by 10 or more. I think that they're going to set the tone, too. I was happy to see that Jalen Hurts was not on the injury report. I believe that, you know, the Eagles don't like the fact that they've been disrespected across the board as a not worthy one seed, and anybody in the NFC is just playing for second anyway, and that the Niners are the hot team that everybody's jumping on board after they have kind of carried the torch all year. I think the Eagles have something to prove. I think they're going to make a statement. I think they win by 10 points.
My initial read on this game was the Giants are really good at mucking games up and keeping everything close. And for the most part, they have. Like, they've lost a handful of games this year. They've lost 7 games. And most of those are one possession games, and that were the ones that they've lost. But if you look at the games that they've played against the Eagles this year, and this is the old saying, it's hard to beat a team 3 times.
True.
It's also hard to beat a great team once. The 2 games that the Giants have played against the Eagles this year, they lost 48-22. Game that they played at home, and then when they went into Philadelphia, final game of the regular season, Philadelphia didn't even have all their dudes. They were kind of resting their guys. I know Jalen Hurts played, you know, threw 35 passes, but a game that they didn't really have to win. And they beat the Giants by 6, 22-16, and the Giants outscored Philadelphia by 10 points in the fourth quarter. I think that the Eagles cover the spread in this one as well. I'm going against my initial read that the Giants are going to keep it close. I think that the Eagles are going to win this game comfortably as well.
Yeah, I would take the Eagles side in this. It's a completely different matchup from what we saw last week against Minnesota. Everybody scores on Minnesota. That's not a feather in the cap of the Giants, because the Vikings defense is just that bad. I think the Eagles at home, much better pass rush. They forced Daniel Jones into mistakes. And if we do believe Jalen Hurts is truly healthy, like you mentioned, Joel, he's off the injury report, then I think these receiving weapons, Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown, are going to torch the Giants secondary. And I think the Eagles cover.
Catfish says Giants rested more players than that Eagles in that Week 18 game, which is true.
They did.
It was just a game that really didn't matter to either side. Like, the Eagles were just getting kind of a tune-up.
The Eagles had to kind of scoreboard watch to see if they needed the win.
And they were up big going into the fourth.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can put a whole lot of stock in that game. And then the previous time that they played, the Eagles rolled in New York. Question here is going to be how much money. Now, as much as I just talked about how I think Philly's going to cover this, and we all did, I feel more confident in Kansas City minus 9 than Philadelphia minus 7.5.
And I think the reason why for me is New York is 17-5 against the spread and 14-8 outright in the playoffs in the Super Bowl era. I've seen it happen in Green Bay when they went in and did everything they weren't supposed to do, beat the Packers. That's the only thing that doesn't want that keeps me from going big.
Eli Manning's not walking through that door, Drew.
I get it, but Daniel Jones played his ass off last week. Now, running is going to be the key as well, because I believe that he's going to have to throw the ball.
Vanilla Vic.
Okay.
Vanilla Vic.
Danny Nichols.
Roll into Philly. Danny Dimes isn't as good 50? As Vanilla Vic. I'm cool with 50. Who's your stat boy, by the way?
I looked it up.
He's
I just
got a little
it up.
Stat boy. I didn't know he had him on the payroll.
I just made a pull on ESPN while we were talking about it to see if we were going a little too far on Philly.
Okay, so $50 on Philly minus 7.5 against
good with
the football.
That?
I'm good with 50. 50 is good. I don't want it to be less than Kansas City. Okay. All right, AFC matchup. Buffalo taking on Cincinnati, hosting great. Cincinnati, giving up 5.5 points to the Bengals. And Joey Burrow, I root so hard. I'm torn this week because Joey Burrow, we're fast friends, we're best
man
buds.
Crush.
I wouldn't go that far. He's not going to. I mean, we're friends,
more
but
than
he's
just
not.
A crush, Joel.
We're friends, but he's
well,
no Will Levis.
The way he described it, it was more than
they're
just
soulmates.
A crush.
We
yeah,
locked eyes and all of that, but he's no Will Levis. I'm torn here because you have Burrow, he and I are BFFs, and then you have Buffalo, who has the greatest collegiate quarterback of all time statistically in Case Keenum, and then you have Ed Oliver on that team as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm torn. Like, I have too many
well,
dogs in this fight.
You're using your heart instead of your head to try and figure this one out.
I have some head logic, but we'll start with you. How do you feel about Buffalo minus 5.5?
A lot of people believe that this game should be played in Cincinnati. A lot of things are that Cincinnati believes that, look, because that game wasn't completed and because of the fact that there is a lot of unfinished business, they believe that they're going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, and they've got a lot to prove. Fact of the matter is, Buffalo did not play very well last week, and a lot of people thought that they deserved to lose. I wouldn't go that far, but they didn't play their best game, and they know it. And so I think that they're going to come out to try and send the message, and we'll know a lot about this game in the first quarter, because we'll find out if the Bills got the ship right, Chip. And if, you know, Cincinnati can do what they want to do the way that their tailback keeps bragging about and running his mouth off about doing in Joe Mixon, or if they understand that the Bills are, on paper, I think, a better roster and a stronger team. I expect the Bills to win this game. I don't know that they're going to cover the 5.5. This is one where I would take Cincinnati in the points, I think.
One of the things that I think we undervalue when it comes to handicapping games in the NFL is offensive line. And the Bengals have already ruled out left tackle Jonah Williams and right guard Alex Kappa for Sunday's game against the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills can create a lot of pressure with that front four that they have, and Ed Oliver can run wild in the backfield of any quarterback. That is a huge loss. Cincinnati's playing without 40% of their offensive line. Good call. Max Sharping, dude that sucked at left tackle last year, you're now protecting Joe Burrow against a pretty intimidating Buffalo Bills defense. I think the Buffalo Bills are actually going to roll in this game because the Bengals' offensive line is as banged up as it is.
What do you got, B-Man?
I'm going with Joel. I think the Bengals are going to win outright, much less just cover the number.
Wow.
I just don't like the way this Buffalo team looked, and it goes further back than just only winning by 3 at home against Skylar Thompson. Second half of the year, ever since Josh Allen hurt his elbow, he's been turnover prone, and I just don't like the way that team looks right now. I think the Bengals.
You ready, Branham? Cincinnati 15-4 against the spread on the road since the start of last season. 7-2 against the spread this season. 7-1 against the spread in its past 8 games. 4-0 against the spread in its past 4 games on the road. Bills are 3-7-1 against the spread in their past 11. I like the Bills to win the game, but I like the Bengals to cover the spread.
Yeah, Bengals plus 5.5 is the pick.
You guys. All right, y'all are going to hear about this.
How much, B-Mac?
You know what they say about history, and what about they say about the future?
Let's go 50.
Okay.
I think we got to bet big if we're going to get back in this.
50 on Cincy.
Well, there goes my confidence in BZ Money this week. All right, let's wrap it up with the game in North California as the San Francisco 49ers are giving 4 points to the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys looked great last week against a sub-500 team. Brock Purdy did his thing in San Francisco. Tight game for a while. San Francisco pulled away at the end. How are we feeling about San Francisco giving 4 points to America's team?
Yeah, I think that the Niners defense is a lot better than what the Buccaneers defense put up against Dallas a week ago. Look, credit to Dak for kind of coming back out of it. Credit for the offense and defense for playing well against Tampa Bay. This is a different animal. The only way that the Niners find a way to make this game close and or lose it is if Purdy just doesn't look so Purdy anymore. And we're going to have to see, because otherwise I think there's a pretty, pretty good chance that the Niners cover the spread.
You watch Curb?
I don't. It just
that was a good reference.
But I know that Larry David, pretty.
I would like you a lot more if you watch Curb.
Well, then that gives you
more motivation to not watch.
I would.
You're welcome.
I mean, you're the one that's losing out here. Curb Your Enthusiasm, best sitcom ever made.
Okay.
I'm more torn on this game than I am any of the other 4 games.
Really?
Dallas, look, I think a lot of people look at Dallas's game last week and kind of get prisoner of the moment-y because, they banged up on Tampa Bay. But Tampa Bay has not been very good all year. Tampa Bay was a sub-500 team all year.
And as you talk about, the offensive line was not good.
No, they didn't play well. And look, the Cowboys get credit for winning that game on the road, just banging and, crushing Tampa Bay's hopes and all of that. But also, I don't put a whole lot of value in that victory. That said, it's Brock Purdy in the playoffs. Like, do I trust Brock Purdy in the playoffs? Quite frankly, I don't.
Clock strike
Quite
midnight.
Frankly, I don't strike. Like, I don't put a whole lot of trust in Dallas. I don't put a whole lot of trust on either one of these teams.
Yeah, but if,
I have no idea where to go.
Of
here.
The 4 sides, offense and defense, forget special teams for a minute. On both sides of the football, what's the one thing that you do trust?
San Francisco defense more than Dallas offense. San Francisco offense, even with Brock Purdy at the helm,
more
over
weapons.
Dallas. Okay, you talk me in. I'll go San Francisco -4. You talk me into. I'm an impressionable young man, middle aged man.
What do you got, B-Mac?
I would take the Dallas side of this at +4, like you guys have mentioned in Joel's excellent reference to Kirby Enthusiasm.
By accident.
Yeah,
by
not. Accident.
I know
but
he said it. I know what
Joel said it. Who said it?
Larry David.
All right. Did I say Larry David? Did I give it away?
He said Larry David
known
before.
It. Nick Ciraro was a massive fan of the show and that comment.
Usual suspect.
I think the other shoe drops here with Brock Purdy. The Dallas defense, I think, if we're talking about ranking units in this game, I would rank San Francisco defense 1, Dallas defense 2. I think those are the size of the ball I trust the most. The bet I really want to make is the under in this game at 46.5. But if we're picking
Stop
a side, I'll
rules,
go
B-Mac.
Dallas +4.
So
you and I are on the Niners.
I don't want to put a whole lot on this though. Like
Dallas has lost
maybe?
7 straight playoff games as an underdog.
Here we go.
Its last playoff upset was in 1992 in the conference championship game against San Francisco.
Because the 1992 San Francisco 49ers had so much bearing on this game.
Although Dallas is 13-5 against the spread on the road since the start of last season. San Francisco 8-1 against the spread at home. Just letting you know.
Joel Statboy
Blank. Six straight covers.
All right, so like, why don't you answer something that's perfect?
$25.
Okay, $25 San Francisco. How much did y'all bet on Cincinnati? 50. That foolish 50. Bet y'all made? 50. Okay, 50.
Of the great bet, you mispronounced it.
Kansas City minus 975. Philly minus a touchdown and a half for 50. Minus 7.5. Cincinnati plus 5.5 for 50. And then San Francisco minus 4 for a quarter. Beasy Money, we picked a winner every week. You just have to figure out what that winner is. All right, Houston Rockets. They're going to play some basketball tonight, right? They're playing some basketball this evening. Is it this evening? They're playing the
tomorrow,
game.
Tomorrow, Minnesota.
Oh, tomorrow in Minnesota. The Rockets are at Minnesota tomorrow. Who from this current Rockets roster and coaching staff do we want to be part of the long-term plans for the Houston Rockets? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Speaking of the Rockets, whenever you go to a Rockets game at the Toyota Center, you can now get some Gentle Ben. Gentle Ben in every bar inside the Toyota Center. So if you're looking for your Gentle Ben fix, which you should be, just go to the Toyota Center, ask for some Gentle Ben, and they'll hook you up. There's also a Gentle Ben bar in Section 125. Of the Toyota Center. So make sure you swing on by Section 125 and try their signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Vodka, gin, bourbon. We know that Gentle Ben does it better than anybody else. Double cask strength bourbon, too, by the way. Double platinum winner in the prestigious Ascot Awards. So you really need to get your hands on that bourbon. But Gentle Ben, of course, they use their state-of-the-art innovative Proseto craft technology that makes them better in purity, makes them better in aroma, makes them better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, the vodka, the gin, the bourbon. Compare it to your brand, and you'll never go back. I did the same thing. Ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find the vodka and gin, Total Wine, Specs, also online, gentleben.com. You can find the bourbon, the double cast strength bourbon as well, now at Total Wines and most Specs. Also, look at the end caps at these Total Wines. Gentle Ben with a special in-cap promotion at Total Wine throughout the city. Also, big news today. We've been telling you about this all week. Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, he's going to be doing the Meet the Maker events at Total Wines for the next few days. Today is the first of three. So if you're in the area, 4 to 7 o'clock, Cinco Ranch, Total Wine. Ricky Ford will be there sampling out some Gentle Ben. Swing on by, say hello to him, and make sure you're trying his outstanding stuff. Cinco Ranch today, 4 to 7. If you can't make it out today, they'll be at West U's location January 25th and then January 27th in Memorial. Meet the Maker, 4 to 7 today, Cinco Ranch location to Total Wine, and try some Gentle Spin and get your Gentle Ben and get your Friday started right. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets play basketball tomorrow, trying to snap the dozen-game losing streak. When you start calling streaks a dozen, usually not a good thing, especially the losing streaks, obviously. Who from this roster, I think this is a good question here, who from this roster and this coaching staff do we want here long-term?
Well, to me, I mean, I think there's two logical choices, and I think everybody's first answer is Jalen Green, but everybody's first answer should also include Alperen Şengün, because Alperen Şengün may not be a superstar per se. Alperen Şengün is a really good big man in this league, and he's only going to get better. And when he starts learning the defensive end of the floor and can be on the floor for longer periods of time, he's going to be impactful.
Is that something you can learn?
Oh, defense, absolutely you can learn.
I think there's elements that you can learn that makes you better, but you're not going to gain a ton of speed, a ton of lateral quickness, a ton of like being better at one-on-one defense. I think that Şengün, like, he can get better, no doubt. I think Şengün's always going to have an element to his game that's a liability on the defensive end. Not a deal breaker at all.
There's a lot of guys that have not had a deal- long
exactly.
careers doing
exactly.
that.
Yeah. Not a deal breaker at all, but I don't think we ever look at Alpi Şengün as like, you know, an all defensive.
Yeah, he's never going to be Akeem or Dikembe or some of the guys that are going to be shot blockers and, you know, and athletic enough to guard threes and two. No, but you know what? He can get better than what he's been.
Sure.
If that is in fact why the coaching staff is telling you, or the general manager who pulls all the strings, telling you that, you know, he doesn't deserve to be on the floor more than 23 minutes, 24 minutes a game. This dude has been your best and most consistent offensive player by the way he not only gets buckets for himself, but gets other people involved. Jalen Green's the other one for me. I think those two guys, and then also Jabari Smith. I mean, Jabari Smith. Yeah. I think Jabari, Alperen, and Jalen Green are the three that you can build around. KPJ is a loose cannon to me. KPJ is a guy that he can't be your point guard. Mm-hmm. He doesn't shoot it well enough. He's basically a poor man's version of Jalen Green. They're going to end up playing the same position if he's not going to be your point guard. And I think that it didn't cost you a whole lot to get him, but I think he might have some value with the league when you see the contract that he signed. I think as from a player's perspective, those are the three players that I'm going to build around.
The Kevin Porter Jr. conversation, I think that there is a path for him to where he could be a part of the future plans. I just don't think he's ever going to be willing to accept that. Because I think part of the future plans, if you had him as part of your future plans, I think he can play the wing with Jalen Green. I think Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. can be the wings behind a really good point guard.
Absolutely.
Or in front of a really good point guard. Or he can be a really good six man where he comes off the bench, gives you your usage for 20, 25 minutes a game. I just don't think Kevin Porter Jr. with the Rockets will be willing to accept either role. He wants to be the point guard of the Rockets. He thinks he's a superstar for the Houston Rockets. He'll never accept the wing role. He'll never accept the six-man role. So for that reason, I'm with you. I don't think Kevin Porter Jr. is part of what I would consider my future plans. The big three that you named, absolutely. Jabari Smith has to be. Alpi Şengün absolutely is. And then, of course, Jalen Green absolutely is. Let's go with the coaching staff first. Anybody on the coaching staff that you want part of your long-term plans?
No.
I love John Lucas. Probably not. Like, probably not.
I mean, when you say long-term with Luke, it's always a question. He is one of the most someone was telling me last night, he's on the list of the 100 most influential people in basketball in the world. I mean,
yep.
The guy carries some clout. He's a great dude. I love Luke.
He's one of those guys you want to keep in the organization, but I don't know if he can be on the bench.
He's Stone's guy. So he's labeled, too, which isn't to his fault, but it could be to his detriment. But I think that Luke would be the only guy I'd consider just because he means so much off the floor. And with so many young guys, the development, kind of the things you're talking about that the coaching staff should have already started to do, which is stop getting pouty pants every time that you don't get to be the guy with the ball on the isolation on the wing. Stop being pouty pants when someone else scores other than you. And stop worrying about points being the only way to dictate and be a barometer as to if you're playing good basketball or not. Because you see it with those three guys in particular. You see it with Jabari. You definitely see it with KPJ. And you see it with Jalen, too. And that's something whoever coaches this team going forward after this season has got to rectify immediately.
I have 1.5 more players that I think we could have a conversation about being part of that core three.
Other than the three.
That we just talked about. Okay. I think Tari Eason could easily be part. Now, he's not one of your superstars. He's not a star in this nucleus of young players that you hope to grow. But I think that Tari Eason has a chance to be a really good role player in the NBA. And I think I would include him in this
list. The reason why I didn't include him, Jeremy, is because to me, I was thinking about impactful, more franchise-type players.
Sure.
But definitely as a role player, Tari Eason, to me, I'm a big fan of, and I believe he's only going to get better.
I think Tari Eason can be, and he has a lot of room to grow. He's got a lot of the potential. He's nowhere near that yet, but I believe Tari Eason can be a really good role player on a playoff caliber team. The last one, and quite frankly, we haven't seen a whole lot of this guy that I wish we saw more of, and I wish he was getting all of Knicks' minutes, especially for a bad team that's lost 12 in a row. Ty Washington.
I agree.
Like, I have no idea what Ty Washington is right now. If he had Knicks' minutes, we would have a better idea if he belongs in the future plans of the Houston Rockets.
No, you're absolutely right. Look, he's torn up the G League. He's done what he's supposed to do as a true combo guard that can play the point. Like I told you when they drafted him, I think he could be the kind of guy that could develop into a true point guard for this team, but he has a decent shot too. But they're not giving him a shot because of Deshaun Knicks, because of some of the twisted ways that they're putting certain lineups and combinations out there. It's absolutely ridiculous to me that you see that this team has been tinkered with in a negative way to the level that it has. Because the other guy, when you mention Eason, look, Jayshon Tate shouldn't have the contract that he has right now because you didn't have to do it.
Right.
And the fact that you did limits the ability to get something for him, who, by the way, I believe from what people have told me, that internally they value as a protected first-round pick if they would try to trade Jayshon Tate. You didn't spend a single thing to get him, and he's not worth that much. This is another big problem that the Rockets have. The false valuing of their own players, like Eric Gordon a year ago, like a Jayshon Tate, and then you sign guys to contracts before you have to. But I agree with you. I think Ty Washington and Tari Eason can and should be rotational pieces, but I was more focused on impactful guys.
I like Eason more than Washington at this point. Quite frankly, we don't know a whole lot of what Washington is. As far as like the trade value for a Tate, I'm okay if you draw your line in the sand for a second rounder.
First round, come on now.
But a protected first is a late first.
No, they're talking about protected in the first five to first 10, and they got to have that.
That's not a protected first. Protected first is you're protecting all those draft slots. Like that's a protected first is a late first rounder.
Well, they want only protected through the first five to the first 10
spots.
There's
no way he's worth that. Like,
no way.
If you got a late first rounder for Jayshon Tate, like I'm cool with that. That'd be fine.
Absolutely.
That'd
be great because you didn't spend anything to get him. It's a phenomenal transaction. Yeah,
but I wouldn't trade him for a second. Like, second-round picks are a dime a dozen to me. I almost wouldn't trade anything for a second
round. Yeah, value in the second round in the NFL is so totally different than the NBA. You're right. It's a crapshoot like that
Eric
they make the team.
Eric Gordon, I wouldn't trade Eric Gordon for a second-round pick. I would draw the line in the sand, second round. I'm not trading him for a second-rounder. Any first-rounder, cool. And I would even take a first-rounder in 3 years. I'm not picky about the first-rounder. Any first-rounder. Second-rounder, I say no. And then if you still have Eric Gordon when the trade deadline passes, I say, hey, John Wall, meet Eric Gordon. See you later, Eric Gordon. And just let his contract run out.
Look, I think there are plenty of teams that have playoff aspirations that realize the value of an Eric Gordon. I think in retrospect, as much as Phoenix decided if they were going to have to deal with the idiocracy of the general manager position and saying, hey, nice offer for us on Eric Gordon. We think we can get better, but we'll come back to you. Don't do that to another team. And then you decided, maybe just for spite, not to get a guy that obviously a year ago could have really helped you.
Yep.
Eric Gordon has value to teams like the Clippers, to teams like the Suns, to teams that still need an extra weapon, even maybe with Milwaukee. But I don't think I think it's going to be a late first at best for Eric Gordon. But again, at a certain point,
done.
If every time he's in the lineup, he's just all about himself and getting his shots and pouty pants when he doesn't get what he wants, he's addition by subtraction, he should go.
Any first rounder for Eric Gordon. And I'm telling Eric Gordon, thank you. We love you. Go play for a playoff team. We know that's what you really want. Do we miss anybody? Our core three, Jalen Green, Alpi Shingun, Jabari Smith, Tari Eason is our role player, and then maybe Ty Washington.
Ty's so young, too. He can develop.
I think so. I'm intrigued by him. I just don't know if he's part of the future plans yet because we haven't seen him. 713-780-ESPN. Do we miss anybody? 713-780-3776, our HRP listener line. Let's be positive on a Friday. Killer Bees are always positive.
You didn't mention the general manager in that discussion.
We talked about the staff and the front office.
We just said coaching.
Okay. Well, I knew your answer.
Okay.
You'd rather have James Harden than Rafael Stone. So I have your answer.
Thanks a lot.
Let's be positive on a Friday. Which coaching hire makes you feel okay? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
We're going to be giving away some tickets here in the next few minutes. BMAC, when do you want me to do this? You want me to do this going to break at the end of the segment?
Yeah, let's do it at the end of the segment.
All right. We usually do it at the start of segments, but look at BMAC controlling the Killer Bee. We're very controllable, as many producers on the show think.
Geppetto that it left would tell you that.
Yeah, many of the producers think. Ricky Ford, by the way, we were telling you about that Meet the Maker event coming up today at the Total Wine and Cinco Ranch from 4 to 7. People are tweeting us asking, are there free samples? If it's free, give me three. But yes, there will be some free samples of Gentle Ben at the Cinco Ranch location, 4 to 7 Total Wine in Cinco Ranch. So swing on by there, say hello to Ricky, try their great stuff, you'll fall in love. But yes, Brother Bear, there are free samples. If it's free, give me three. Blankers, by the way, this coffee that you made is outstanding.
Thank you.
This is very good coffee. Now if you could go make me a sandwich and pick up my dry cleaning after that, I'd really appreciate it.
Now if you can use lipstick when you kiss my rear end, we could figure some stuff out.
I do owe you lunch, though, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of that, I guess I shouldn't have brought that up. When do you want that?
I'm not picky. It's not a big deal. We'll figure it out.
What are you going to want?
I don't know. I'm not going to break the bank, and I'm not going to be difficult on it.
Like,
am I that way?
Am I picking up something? I'll get plenty of ketchup packets for you. I'll make sure I get plenty of that. A bottle. I'll just go to Kroger and buy a
ketchup
bottle.
Probably cheaper that way.
I'll get you a baked potato. That way you can put your ketchup all over it. Let's be positive on a Friday. Killer Bees are always positive.
Sure.
We know that D'Amico Ryans is interviewing today. I have no clue whether or not it's on a Zoom or it's in person. My guess it's on a Zoom, which disappoints me. It doesn't surprise me at all. I'm hoping that I'll be like pleasantly surprised if the news comes out that, oh, yeah, they met him in San Francisco. That would be great. I don't think so. Denver met him there yesterday, though, by the way. Like, Denver's outclassing the Houston Texans. They meet in person with Sean Payton. They meet in person with D'Amico Ryans. The Houston Texans asked Sean Payton for his email address so they can send him the Zoom, and I think they're probably going to do the same thing with D'Amico. I've been looking all day to try to find this information, and I've not been able to find if that interview is going to be in Zoom or if the interview is going to be in person, but we'll find out. Colin Cowherd, by the way, dropped another Sean Payton nugget. No one thinks Colin Cowherd's credible, even though he keeps dropping these Sean Payton nuggets that are 100% true. Uh-huh. He said that Russell Wilson has contacted Sean, legally, by the way, through channels. Cowherd said he wants Sean Payton. He needs fixing. He know he needs fixing. So we know that Denver has met in person with Sean Payton in L.A. for 5 to 6 hours. And we now know that the quarterback for the Denver Broncos is basically calling and begging Sean Payton to come to Denver and be his head coach.
Okay. Well, we've said all along, right from the minute that Denver said they were interested, it was a good fit. You know what? From a Sean Payton perspective, at least he gets a veteran quarterback that he probably thinks he can fix. He's got a roster that's a well advanced from what the Texans have and a lot of the other teams that he would be talking to and about with their coaching position. And I think that he's worked with a small quarterback in Drew Brees in the past, and I think that offensively that it might be the right match at the right time with the right opportunity with an ownership group that's going to throw silly money at him like they did Russell Wilson, and I think that it's probably where he ends up.
Yeah, I think it's where he ends up too, which would make the D'Amico, you know, he's out there. Like he's out there to be got for the Houston Texans. D'Amico's my top target now that Benny Johnson's off the list. I prefer D'Amico Ryans over anybody else, including Sean Payton, including the offensive guys, although I do want offense, even though it can't be from D'Amico Ryans. Which coaching hire makes you feel okay? Because yesterday we talked about how we're losing hope. We thought the Houston Texans were figuring it out, and we've kind of lost a little bit of hope that they are figuring it out. Which coaching hire allows you to bring that hope back, just even if it's a sliver, even if it's one iota? Which head coaching hire gives you some newfound hope after you lost it?
Coaching hire, newfound hope after I lost it?
Yeah, I think we lost it a little bit with the way the Texans have went around, you know, interviewing Sean Payton. And even if the Texans didn't have anything to do with Ben Johnson pulling his name out of the hat, I don't want to have that fight. Even if the Texans had nothing to do with that, Ben Johnson being our top target and taking his name out of consideration, yeah, it hurts. It
definitely
it
took the air out of our
Titans,
right? Yeah,
absolutely. Right? It's our top target. Even if the Texans had no involvement in Ben Johnson pulling his name out of the hat, mm-hmm, it still stinks,
right,
if
it,
you
it,
wanted
it,
Ben
it
Johnson.
It absolutely does, because I thought that he was an innovative mind. Look, and I think that as much as you and I were on the bandwagon, hearing a guy like Mike Tannenbaum say, I had him in Miami, and can't speak highly enough about the guy and his ability to command a room and leadership and all these other things. It was, and at that point, he was still in the process. I'm like, good, go get him even harder now. It sounds like we were right on and spot on with our deal. I don't want Jonathan Gannon. It would turn me completely off. The fact that he had two interviews the last go-around, didn't get the job. And you know, we've talked to Philly fans that would be ecstatic if he left the Eagles. That's not a good impression to have for a guy that you're going to hire as the head coach.
It's more than one, Blankers.
I know.
It's more than one.
I've done the same thing, yep.
It's like a lot of them. A lot of Eagle fans want Jonathan Gannon out of there. And like they won 14 games. They won 14 games, yeah, and they'd be happy if their defensive coordinator left, and that's who the Texans are probably going to hire. So, okay, Gannon's off that list.
Yep.
D'Amico Ryans would make me happy. I would be happy with D'Amico Ryans.
As much as I've said I don't want a defensive-minded head coach, D'Amico Ryans would be exciting to me because of the fact that he's young, he's energetic, he definitely can command a room and be a leader of men, and I think that he could put together a staff that would be worthy of the Houston Texans resurrecting their image and doing good things on the football field, and we wouldn't be dealing with some of the things that were shortcomings of the last two coaches we've seen.
That's the why he's the one defensive coordinator I'm,
yeah,
cool with.
And I
think he
that
would bring in a good staff.
And I could see that. Like, to me, with the offensive coordinators, and you're probably going to crap all over this, and I understand it if you do, but of all the other names offensively that have been in the mix so far outside of Sean Payton, the thing that bothers me is that there's no one that's really with any kind of sustained success tells me that there's a guy that's calling the plays, that's the only mind in the room, that's doing the things his way. Ben Johnson, they turned the reins over to him and just said, go do it, and he did it. And so that's what was really appealing to me as well. When you look at the fact that Steichen works for a guy that's an offensive-minded coach, and Sirianni's a guy that I think in the game planning and during the weekly meetings is a guy that's probably leading the room. I have some concerns. Brian Daboll with the Giants, if Kafka does get in the room and they don't Zoom chat or they meet with him, that's the one drawback I would have with a Kafka too. The one guy that intrigues me from the standpoint of developing a quarterback, working with young talent and doing things that they haven't talked to, is a guy that I know that you're going to crap on, but I think Cliff Kingsbury, I don't know that I completely agree with all of his coaching philosophies and things that he's done, but maybe he learns from that. But I think that he brings clout with a name and offensive-minded, the way everybody thinks about him and still wants him to coach. I think from an offensive perspective and how important it is as it relates to getting your quarterback, mm-hmm. I think I would really be fired up if I saw a guy like that as a finalist for the Houston Texans.
I think it'd be fun and exciting. I like Cliff way more than some people do. I think Cliff is a far better NFL head coach than he gets credit for. He had that team last year. What was it, 6-0 start? They're a dark horse.
7-0
start. Yeah. They're a dark horse Super Bowl contender. They had some injuries a little bit and then faded. They did fade. Like, to be fair, they faded and they faded fast. And then this year, it was like they just could never get out of the gate. Like, they had injuries. They didn't play well. Couldn't get out of their own way. And then how much are you also attributing that to Kyler Murray? Like, is it Kyler Murray's fault for not being that leader, not being able to have that?
He's worked with some pretty good names,
game.
Good quarterbacks. He's done some good things for quarterbacks.
He worked with Mahomes in college.
That's what I'm saying. So he's worked with Mahomes. Whether you like or dislike Kyler Murray, you realize he got his second contract in part because of Cliff's development and working with him. So I think Cliff would be a big name for him.
So who were the names that would excite you again? It was Cliff. Did you like would Kafka excite you? Would Steichen excite you?
To me, Kafka more than it would with a Steichen, because I don't know that you're going to be drafting a running style quarterback either. But I mean, I like what Daboll's done, and he's been very consistent with
Kafka's kind of. I mean, they run there a lot too. I think they do. Those offenses are kind of similar. In fact, Kafka and Steichen are almost a tie for me. Like, they're on the same level for me. I would agree.
I would put those two. That may be lesser for the common fan, but I would say those two are next in line for me to be the guys that really, I think they're going in the right direction. Whether you know the name, like it's a household name or not, I think they're going in the right direction if they go with either of those two guys. And again, like I said, my wild card sleeper would be Cliff Kingsbury.
If I'd be fine with Cliff too. Of the names that are on the list though, like D'Amico's the most exciting for me. If they brought in D'Amico, I would like yesterday I lost hope. If they brought in D'Amico, it's like, okay, all right. Like, I'll give him another chance, and then maybe that's foolish on my part. But D'Amico would give a certain level of buy-in for me again. Lower than that, Kafka and Steichen. Kafka and Steichen will be way more reserved excitement, but I think those are the best names from this list. If it's anybody else, if it's Jonathan Gannon, the Texans fooled you.
I agree.
The Texans fooled you with this little illusion of, we're going to be shopping at the top of the market. We're going to interview all these guys, kind of, via Zoom, and then if they hire Gannon, they just fooled you all. 713-780-ESPN. If what is left out on the market, and we're assuming that it's not Sean Payton, 713-780-ESPN, who would excite you? Who would you be excited about? 713-780-3776. What could salvage this coaching search? All right, let's give away some tickets now. Adam Sandler's coming to town. The American comedian, actor, screenwriter, producer, singer, musician, Hooper. Does it all. Adam Sandler is coming to Houston for his 2023 tour. Adam Sandler's bringing his outstanding and renowned tour to the Toyota Center February 13th, where he's poised to deliver his unique brand of comedy and song. Caller number 5 right now to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to see the show. Get your tickets now at livenation.com. Houston Astros, I think that they have already all but announced their opening day roster. Also an injury to a prospect that stinks. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible. And that's why I love these guys. Knuckleheads.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, y'all stop calling BMAC. Ty already won the tickets to go see Adam Sandler for his tour coming to the Toyota Center February 13th. Stop calling him. Stop trying to get free tickets. They've already been won by Ty. You have to go to livenation.com If you want to go see Adam Sandler on February 13th, and who wouldn't? Blinkers hooped with him. Said he could ball.
He could hoop.
Said he liked the shot, but he could ball.
He wasn't a great shooter, but he knew his limitations. He was good at dishing and defense and running the floor.
I was always a very streaky shooter. I would have games where I would go 3 for 15. I'd have games where I'd go 13 for 15 and drop a 40 burger.
You had a 40 burger.
Career high in my ABA career was a 42-point game.
Whew.
But I mean, it was very, very bad competition. Was I six? No, it was like a high school league.
That's,
and they were playing in the offseason. Gerard Johnson played in the ABA that year, too. He had like a 60 burger.
Wow.
Gerard could play some basketball. He actually played at A&M his freshman year. And yeah. Okay. Yeah, but there wasn't much defense in the ABA. Not the professional league in the 70s and not the recreational local league in the, I guess that'd be the early 2000s. Man, I'm old. The Astros announced that Pedro Leon is out 6 to 8 weeks. I think they announced it. Either they announced it or Brian McTaggart discovered it, because Brian McTaggart's where I saw it. Pedro Leon's out 6 to 8 weeks with a sports hernia, which all but guarantees that he will not be making the opening day roster, pitchers and catchers. And look, he might be back by opening day, but he's not making the roster if he's been out 6 to 8 weeks and misses all of spring training when he has a spot to win on the team. So he's not going to make the opening day roster. Pitchers and catchers report on February 17th. There was some hope that Pedro Leon would be the starting center fielder. I always felt like that was a very small chance, very, very minor chance that he would beat out Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers for the job. But maybe like a backup outfielder spot, that's gone. Pedro Leon will not be on the opening day roster. Now, I do think we'll see him at some point. I think we'll see him with the Astros at some point, injury, production, whatever the case that opens the door. I believe we will see Pedro Leon at some point. The Yuli Gurriel rumors, like apparently he followed Miami, but now does not follow Miami. He's still very much a free agent. Brian McTaggart's mailbag today, or notebook, one of the two, he says that he doesn't feel that Yuli Gurriel is going to be an Astro. So it seems like that Yuli Gurriel ship,
it's going to be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of Astros diehards and Astros Twitter. But the fact that, if you believe any of the rumblings at all, that he was in search of a 2-year deal, that's just not in the realm of possibilities, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just don't think that's in the realm of possibilities for the Astros. I think if they were going to do him a solid, they would offer him a bench role at a 1-year deal, maybe throw an option in there to try and be the deal that gets the deal done. But, yeah, I mean, he's had a wonderful run. The thing that's amazing to me, Jeremy, and I guess because of the way it ended in two of the last three seasons with him hitting less than 240 in the regular season, and obviously he resurrected a lot of hope with the way he finished in the playoffs this last year, but two of the last 3 years have not been great. We know that the 1 year when he put together the batting title and the gold glove, it kind of, again, rejuvenated everybody's emotional love for him and belief he could do it again, and he didn't. So the fact that he has made over $60 million in his career from the Houston Astros was mesmerizing to me. That is a large chunk of change. So I tip my cap to Yuli Gurriel. He will forever be remembered as an Astro and a valuable cog in this unbelievable run for the Astros. But I was never even entertained by the thought of a 2-year deal. And I was wanting a 1-year deal where you would accept a bench role, maybe give you a little bit more than you probably deserved for said bench role as a final thank you, and you run it back one more time. But if you can get a 2-year deal from anyone, more power to you, because I just can't see that being a possibility for the Astros.
I think both those things are not going to happen. I don't think that Yuli will get a 2-year deal. He might get like a 2-year deal with a 1-year guarantee and then a second-year club option or vesting option, something like that. But he's not getting a straight-up 2-year deal. And I don't think that the Astros are going to bring him back either at this point. In fact, I think the Astros are done. I think the Astros are done making moves. I think that as of right now, the opening day roster is set. Now, there's some things that could happen in spring training, whether it's injury, that could impact this and affect this. I don't believe the Astros are going to bring in another player that they feel will make their opening day roster, whether it's a utility player, which I would have liked a utility player a lot. People are like, well, David Hensley is going to fill that role. David Hensley is going to fill that role, but I would have liked another utility guy, start David Hensley out in Sugar Land at the start of the year. That way, whenever you have an injury, then David Hensley then fills that spot. I like to have depth, and I like to plan for injury because injuries are going to happen every single year.
And again, the other thing that I'd add to that, Jeremy, is you also want a guy that's been there and done that from an experience standpoint. If you get into some tough times, you know that Yuli knows how to dig his way out. The same way he dug his way out from a less than stellar regular season, he was big for you in the playoffs. You can't deny that. You know, until he got hurt, he was a contributor. And I think that Hensley is the unknown. He had a cup of coffee at the end of the year, got his feet wet, got some experience. But you truly don't know what he's going to be and what he can do for you this year. And if he struggles, you kind of at least would have known that I got a veteran I can plug and play wherever I need to that fills that role in Yulee.
Yep. See, I'm a big depth guy. Like, whoever is your first player off the bench, he's going to start quite a few games. Like, he's going to start upwards of 50, 60, 70 games. And if you have no injuries, he's going to start about 50 games. And if you're starting about 50 games, you're looking at 200 to 250 plate appearances for your bench. That's a significant amount of plate appearances. Do we want to guarantee those plate appearances for Mauricio Dubon and David Hensley to split, or do you want to guarantee those 200 to 250 plate appearances to a super utility player? I've thrown out the name Jurickson Profar, even though I don't believe that that's realistic. Yuli Gurriel, I think, could be somebody. Now, Yuli Gurriel wouldn't get that many plate appearances because he's not going to start everywhere. Right. He's only going to start at first base, maybe third base, and then DH. Like, those are his three spots. He's not a Marwin Gonzalez that can play every position on the field. He's not a Ledesma Diaz that can play every infield position and left field. But the Astros, in my opinion, are going to break camp, barring injury, with 13 position players. If Maldonado's your catcher, you're going to have Yiner Diaz or Corey Lee that's going to back him up, whoever wins that job.
I think it'll be Lee.
I've also seen some intrigue that Diaz could give you some DH at-bats as a righty because you have Yordan and you have Brantley in left field as lefties. So I could see – I'm not disagreeing, but I could see Diaz getting the backup catcher job. It's going to be whoever has a better spring training. Let's be honest. Whoever has a better spring training is going to win the job.
I think handles the staff, too, is big. I think that
as a backup, though?
Still as a backup, but you know that, you know, Dusty likes to give his days off, and also the fact that it's more important this year without a Verlander at the head of the rotation, and the fact that he, you know, Maldi's getting older, too. He was obviously very dinged up at the end of the year. You don't know where he's going to be to start spring training in the regular season, too. I think you need a guy that's really composed behind the plate. I think Lee's more composed as a catcher, whereas, you know, Yanni Diaz was the guy they were throwing out in the bullpen trying to catch everybody and get him caught up to speed.
There's some doubts that Diaz is going to be able to play that position defensively. But you could also say that's part of the spring training umbrella. Like, did Diaz spend a lot of time in the offseason improving his defense, and now he looks better defensively than Corey Lee when you add in the factor of his bat? So it's a spring training battle. Mm-hmm. A spring training battle, and I think all of those things are variables as to who wins the backup catcher job. Abreu, Altuve, Bregman, Pena, those are your infielders. Your outfielders, left field DH is Yordan and Brantley. Chaz McCormick is your opening day center fielder, in my opinion. Yep. And then Kyle Tucker is your right fielder. Your fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder, however you want to look at it, is going to be Jake Myers. Like, I don't see Justin Durden or Corey Jolks go Cougs, as much as I love him, beating Jake Myers out for that job, especially because Jake Myers can play you some pretty good defense in center field. And then your backup infielders and bench guys are going to be Mauricio Dubon and David Hensley. Those are your 13 position players as of right now. If none of those guys get injured, that is your opening day lineup from a position player point of view. Your 13 pitchers right now, if there's no injuries, I don't know if they're going to use a six-man rotation, Blankers. I would suggest that they do. I like the idea of a six-man rotation with the Astros going to win the American League West. But even if he's not your sixth starter, he's going to be your long guy, right? The six starters are McCullers, Fromber, Javier, Garcia, Hunter Brown, and Jose Urquidy. Those are six guys that are going to be part of your pitching staff. They're going to use up 13 of them. So in the bullpen, you're going to have Ryan Pressly. You're going to have Montero, Neris, Stanek, Abreu, Maton. And that final job, going to be either Seth Martinez or it's going to be Blake Taylor. That's going to be the Astros' opening day roster.
And I'm fine with it.
I don't think they're going to bring in Chafin. I don't think they're going to bring in a utility guy.
No, they still could, and I think it's up for discussion. I think Dusty's obviously still going to probably, you know, you try and make a case that you would like to add one more, you know, his lefty in the bullpen, his loogie, as you call it, because that's like his security blanket. He likes that, but more so than that, he likes a guy that he can go to. A couple years ago, it was your boy Everyday Rayleigh. Last year, he got enamored with a couple of different guys, but he likes a guy that he can just throw out there at a moment's notice, and Seth Martinez became that guy, and I think that he has a lot of trust in Seth Martinez. Blake Taylor's the lefty. I mean, if you want to see that a resurrected, healthy Blake Taylor could do more than he did previously, then go ahead and kick the tires again, But I've seen enough with if it's between those two guys, I'll take Seth Martinez because he gets guys out.
See, I don't need the left. Like, it's a luxury now, especially now, because you have the three-batter minimum. You have righties who are very good at getting lefties out. Like, it's not the Astros in a spot where they have righties, but they can't get lefties out.
Splits tell you a lot, too. You got righties that get lefties out really well.
I mean, the lefty specialist in the playoffs was Brian Abreu, and he was fantastic at it. So it's not like the Astros are hurting by facing left-handers late in games. I would go Seth Martinez over Blake Taylor as well. I think that the final job is going to come down to that, the pitching staff. But I believe the roster is set, quite honestly, barring injury. A gamer asked us on Twitch, does your opinion on the athletic ability of the third baseman change now that the shift is gone?
No, but look, I think I don't worry about third base, whether the shift's gone or the shift's in place, because Bregman could still cover ground when he was the only guy on the left side of the infield. Bregman's a really good defensive third baseman, so I don't worry about that at all. I think for a lot of other teams, might be a problem.
I think he meant more generally speaking, not with the Astros. I think it does a hair. Like, it's still not going to – like, you're still going to play, like, these weird defensive alignments. You're not going to be able to play on the right side of second base if you're a shortstop, but you're going to go as far over as you can. So there's still going to be plenty of room on the left side. So I would say not really, if at all, just very, very minor. You're still going to see weird shifts. Like, you're still going to have the second baseman way over in the hole. He's going to have his feet in the dirt, but way over in the hole. You're still going to have the shortstop playing as far behind the bag as they can get. Has to be on the dirt, can't be on the other side of second base. But you're still going to see some radical shifts within, the letter of the law. 713-780-3776. It's everybody's favorite game. Who said it? BMAC will read us quotes that ESPN 97.5 personality said throughout the week. And then we have to guess who said it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. The John Clay Wolf Show. Here's what's going on in the Wolf Pack.
I've got to stop this Fortnite stuff with my third grader.
Is it a game?
It's a game. It's called Fortnite. Every third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grader in the world is addicted to this thing, and you're running around killing people. And when you control your kid's behavior with the power cord of the Xbox, if you don't do that, we're going to take your power cord away again.
No! I'll kill you!
The John Clay Wolf Show, every Saturday morning. ESPN 97.5.